Most people think mental health is something that you deal with privately. But what happens when it starts affecting your decisions, your relationships, your safety, or even your future? Because in some cases, it isn't just the personal things, it becomes legal. Now, today, we're going to be talking about something that doesn't get discussed enough, the intersection between mental health, addiction, and real-life consequences, because more people than ever are struggling with anxiety, burnout, substance use, emotional overwhelm, but very few understand what happens when you go through struggles that are starting to impact your decisions in serious ways. Now, today, I'm joined by Mark Astor from the mental health addiction law firm, who works directly with individuals and families navigating these complex situations. Today, we're going to be breaking down this in a way that helps you understand what to look for and what to do before things escalate. Mark, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on. You know, you've been on, you know, many times before, and you're always a pleasure, and you bring such a wealth of information. You know, I just want to, you know, thank you for coming today and spend time with us to help educate our listeners.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Stacey. I enjoyed your company the last time I was here, and well, I think that you're doing important work, and you, on a personal level, you're just a joy to be with, spend time with. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you as well. Now, I want to just, you know, start here. So are you seeing more cases today where mental health or addiction is leading to serious life consequences?
Yeah. I mean, so we just celebrated our 10th anniversary in February, but in February of 16, when I sat down in the local library to open up my law firm, because I had no money to go rent an office. So I started, you know, somewhere I could sit for free. The bulk of the cases that I was actively looking for were alcohol and recreational drug use. Since then, two things came along that really changed the shift, the focus of the kinds of cases. One was the legalization of marijuana, and two was the COVID shutdown. Even here in Florida, we were a little bit restricted.
Yeah.
What we saw after that, after those two things, was a shift from these primary substance use and recreational drug cases to primary mental illness. And so that, which makes the cases considerably more challenging. I think the days where you can just put somebody in treatment for 3 to 6 months, they go to meetings afterwards. I wouldn't say they're gone, but those are not what we get, right? We get the, I always sort of joke that the easy cases go to my competition and the very difficult, challenging cases come to us. So, you know, when you've got somebody who's, for instance, experiencing psychosis because they were using a substance that caused that,
yeah.
And I'm happy to get into that in a little bit. Those are challenging cases, right? Because once somebody is in psychosis where they're, you know, hallucinating, they're delusional, they're, for all intents and purposes, living in a different universe to the rest of us.
Yeah.
It can take time. So it's not just a matter of staying in treatment long enough. They also need to be medicated. Now, sometimes they don't want to take their medications, or they'll start taking them and then they say, well, I'm fine now. I don't need to take them anymore.
Right.
And so it's one thing to get somebody ordered into treatment. It's something completely different to get a judge to give you the authority to basically have somebody taken to a hospital and forcibly medicated. So, I mean, we're talking about asking the court for extraordinary relief here, because yeah. As a general rule, we have a right to say, well, I don't want to take that medication. You know,
right.
When I had my arm surgery recently, you know, the doctor wanted to give me oxys. I said, I'm not taking them. I have a right to refuse. What's he going to do? Have the state come and take me away? Sometimes when you're dealing with somebody who's actively psychotic, that's when the state can step in and effectively terminates everybody's rights to make medical and mental health decisions for the patient.
Yeah.
And now they're going to be forcibly medicated, whether they like it or not. So the cases have become challenging both clinically and legally. And, you know, the recovery journey is longer than it perhaps otherwise would be.
Right. Now, what changed to make this, you know, this way?
Well, I think the big thing is the legalized marijuana. And so there's 40 states that in one way, form or another, you can legally buy marijuana. And I think the problem is what we're really dealing with. Now, I'm a child of the 80s, grew up in the United Kingdom, and I had a number of friends that used marijuana. And truthfully, when they talked about legalizing it here in Florida, I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. Because I was sort of saying, okay, I know what this looks like. It's fine, right? Well, it turns out I was wrong, because the marijuana of today is not the marijuana of the 80s. It's significantly more potent.
Yes.
And more dangerous. And as a result, it can, you know, can lead to things like psychosis. So where there may not have been a mental health issue, now we have a mental health issue. And if there's any predisposition for mental illness in the family, and there's a strong genetic link to some of the things that we see, it's like pouring gasoline on a fire. And once someone's in psychosis, it takes time to get them out. And it only takes one relapse to get them back in. It, you know, essentially, it's a bit like a concussion. The first time you get a concussion, you recover. The second concussion doesn't take nearly the force or impact that the first one did.
Right.
Once the brain is slightly damaged, and I spent 20 years training in the martial arts, and I've had my bell rung once or twice. Once you've had a concussion, it's that much easier to get a concussion. Once you've experienced psychosis, it's that much easier to experience psychosis.
Right.
And that makes them challenging.
It does. It really does. Now, why is this becoming more common?
I think there's a couple things. One is that, you know, these recreational drugs are far more accessible, right? I can just walk into a store and buy it.
Right.
And two, I think there is sort of this idea that it's legal means safe.
Right.
We speak to parents, well, it's legal, so it must be safe. No. You know, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's safe. I mean, there's other substances also that are available in gas stations and things of that nature that are, quote, legal, but they're not safe.
Yeah.
And I think that, frankly, that includes prescription medications. Just because it's legal don't mean it's safe. And I think that's part of the problem, right? Well, you know, he got it legally, he had a card from the doctor, so it must be safe. The doctor would never have given him the card.
Right. Exactly. And you know that there's so many different strands. In one marijuana leaf, there's over 1,000 different strands. And each one is for something different that activates different parts of the brain. People have to really understand what they're taking and how it could affect them also. And then for a lot of people too, a lot of people don't even realize that if you're taking medication also, you could actually reduce the potency of certain medications, you know, and you could have a lot of serious problems, you know, if you're taking medical marijuana along with even legalized marijuana along with other medications. And it's really important, you know, for people to consult their doctors and go over their medical history before they just jump into it. Exactly. And one other thing is, where are you getting it from? You know, how reliable is the resource where you're obtaining the medical marijuana or the marijuana? You know, that's plays a big role. I know that in my area, in New York area, they shut down a bunch of places because what they were doing wasn't safe for individuals. And some of the products that they were purchasing and selling to their customers weren't safe, and they weren't getting them in safe places. So you really have to be careful and know your stuff before you just jump into it.
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point, Stacey. I mean, you know, some of these new products that are available in gas stations, there have been instances where where somebody's used them. And again, thought before, because it's just being sold in a gas station, how dangerous could it be? And yet when it's combined with a prescription medication, it had a deadly effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think your point is really well taken. And, you know, as far as the marijuana is concerned, when you buy alcohol, right, it says on the can, right, the percentage of alcohol, right? And there are regulations that restrict that, right,
mm-hmm.
in terms of how much alcohol can a particular drink contain. Well, there's no such regulation as far as I'm aware when it comes to marijuana. And obviously, if you go to, say, Walmart and buy a beer, and then you go down the street and you go to another convenience store and you buy the beer, if it's the same product, it's going to contain the same level of alcohol. It's not happening with marijuana because there's no oversight. You might buy marijuana from one dispensary and then buy it from another, and they both have different levels of potency, and you don't really know what you're getting, even if they say, well, you know, this is the percentage of THC that's actually in it, which is the, you know, that's the substance that gets you the high, right?
Yes.
They say, well, they might say, well, it's X percent of THC in there. But how do you really know that? Because no one's checking.
Yeah.
So there's no oversight. Of course, there's the ability to cheat, right? Because there's money to be made.
Right.
So we sell the best stuff because you get the best high, right?
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, people are catatonic.
Yes, 100%. Now, a lot of people don't realize when things are escalating, you know, what are some of the early warning signs that mental health or addiction is starting to impact someone's judgment or their behavior?
Yeah, you know, I always tell families to be, I tell especially parents to be nosy parents.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time when we speak to a family, and it's usually mom that calls us first, Stacey.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll say, well, how do you know there's a problem? And you know, the number one answer is, I just know. Subconsciously, mom knows, but what mom may not consciously be aware of is the change of things that are happening, right? For instance, they've become aloof. They no longer want to spend time with the family. They're hanging out with different friends than they used to have.
Right.
They are sleeping most of the day. They're up all night. They can't hold down a job. They're flunking out of school. Maybe they've even been arrested. You know, their eating habits have changed. They went from eating, you know, regular food to, you know, eating all kinds of junk food and sugar.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps they seem unable to focus on anything. Their bathing habits have changed. They're not brushing their teeth. They're not showering regularly. They're just, you know, these things sort of, there's a myriad of red flags, but there's clearly something going on. And maybe they've even admitted it. Sometimes, you know, I'll ask parents, well, how do you know they're smoking?
Right.
Or he tells me, I see him do it in the back garden. I've told him he can smoke, but not in the house. Right. And you take all of those things to mind. You're like, okay, something's not right here. Because he or she never used to be like this. Mm-hmm. And when I ask them what's going on here, their response is, well, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm perfectly okay.
Right.
What's the problem here?
Mm-hmm.
They're in denial. They're in denial. And so the idea of having a conversation about getting this person some treatment is, I mean, that's just a different world. Why would they go to treatment? There's nothing wrong with them.
Exactly. Now, what do families often miss?
Oh, that's a really good question. What do they miss? I think they miss the early warning signs. Okay. And sometimes the early warning signs could be, you know, they know that they're using, but they're like, well, it's just a little marijuana. What's the big deal?
Right.
You know, that is the, if they never used before, why are they using all of a sudden?
Right.
So I think that is something that was missed. Or, you know, to get back to the idea of having, you know, it being legal. Well, he's suffering from anxiety. Why? So he went to his doctor, the doctor gave him the prescription, you know, and he went and filled it at the local dispensary. But what is he anxious about?
Right.
Or is it just an excuse to get high?
Yeah.
Maybe. So there's certainly little things. And sometimes, and I say this from a place of love, sometimes the families are in denial about what they've really been observing. And they know deep down there's a problem. But being willing to admit it is an uncomfortable feeling, because normally I know there's a problem, is and can be followed by the blame game. Well, it's the dad's fault. It's the mom's fault. Well, you know, it's granddad's fault because he was an alcoholic.
Right.
And so what happens is, you know, you go down the path of blaming somebody or finding a reason why this is happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, if somebody had cancer, would you do that? Would you say, well, you know, Mark's got cancer because, well, his grandfather had the same kind of cancer. So it's the grandfather's. We would never do that.
Right.
We would never do that. But yet we do that when it comes to, you know, behavioral health issues, because there's a little bit of stigma attached to it. And the stigma has to do with the fact that it's a conscious choice and not a disease, which is at this point been, you know, completely proven to be wrong. It's not a conscious choice. Now, maybe somebody started to use consciously. They said, oh, I'm just going to have a few drinks, or I'm just going to have a puff. But then once they had that first drink, that first puff, things started to, you know, escalate rather rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to say, well, you know, the reason he can't hold his liquor is because his grandfather was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps anything. It just makes it worse. And at least when you call our office, I mean, I always tell the staff, we live in a no judgment zone. Mm-hmm. It's not about whose fault it was. First of all, it's no one's fault because it's a disease.
Right. Exactly.
And second of all, we're not going to have a debate between the parents or the parents and the grandparents about whose fault it might be because of some genetic connection they may or may not be. That doesn't solve the problem, and it's unfruitful. It just creates tension in the family. And the goal here is to save the family, not destroy it. We're trying to build a bridge, not burn it down.
Exactly. I see that all the time. I see denial from the individual themselves. I see denial from the family members. No one wants to take responsibility for anything. And, you know, if the parents are in denial, it's because they feel a sense, well, if this is my fault. Maybe I didn't do a good job, and you know, but this was a choice, and this was I see a lot of times it's a coping mechanism. You know, when people are going through tough times and they don't know how to cope with a lot of issues, you know, some people go to food, some people go to alcohol, some people go to drugs, or they start in alcohol and then they kind of work their way up the ladder. And then I've known people that have done drugs. And, you know, they just did it at a party and they got addicted to it. You know, in our area, I was very surprised, but I had to do a write-up in a newspaper and I had to go to a seminar that the police were teaching. And heroin addiction was one of the top things in our area. And I was surprised that heroin was such a huge issue. And a lot of kids were getting their hands on heroin and then just one usage and they were getting completely addicted to it. And then several people died from one usage of the heroin because it was laced with fentanyl or something else. And so it definitely is a huge problem in our society. And it's, you know, and instead of, you know, pointing fingers and trying to, you know, see who is to blame, let's solve the problem. And so, you know, we can improve that person's life.
Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of, you know, these behavioral health issues. Don't, You know, I was talking to somebody on a podcast, and they said, "Well, what do you?" The issue that we were discussing was could we ban marijuana? Well, first of all, we've been down that street with alcohol, mm-hmm. and yeah, I mean, we banned it, and what happened? It just went into the underworld.
Yeah.
We've already had our marijuana banned, and it didn't do anything, right? It was still readily available, but we mm-hmm. didn't have the mental health crisis that we have now. So I think we've made it readily available. So I think there has to be stricter regulation on who can get it and who can't get it. The level, mm-hmm. the potency. We regulate the potency of alcoholic beverages. Why can't we do the same with marijuana?
Exactly. Exactly. Right? Great point. Yeah.
So I think there has to be some regulation. But the problem is that many states have legalized it, Stacey, because there's too much money to be made. You mm-hmm. know, the state of Colorado legalized marijuana. And I don't know if you've been to Denver recently, but my wife and I were there for about a year and a half ago for a conference. And everywhere we went, we could smell weed. We were in New York about 2 months ago, and everywhere we went, we could smell weed. It was everywhere.
Everywhere.
So everywhere we went, we could smell it. It was truly unbelievable. Colorado now is now having a mental health crisis. Why? Because a lot of these people who are using this new legalized marijuana are experiencing mental health issues, and the state's running a budget deficit. They don't have the money to provide services for all these people.
Right.
So what do we do?
Exactly.
I think the greed, right? Because these states legalized it knowing that it was illegal under federal law, although that looks like it's going to change.
Yeah.
They knew it was illegal under federal law, and they did it anyway.
Right.
Because, you know, well, there's money to be made. Yeah, but there's money to be made, but there's consequences for doing that. And
right.
ultimately, these states are going to pay a whole lot more out, or be required to pay more out, and they're going to get in. Because
right.
they're going to have a whole group of people that have mental health issues now they didn't have before, and someone's got to pay for the treatment.
Right.
Not everybody has the money to pay for treatment. Not everybody has health insurance that will cover treatment. So the state's going to have to pony up,
right.
or not, as the case may be, and just leave these people to fend for themselves.
Right.
So we'll start filling up our jails with people who have mental health issues, because ultimately they're going to do something stupid and get arrested, or they'll end up dead.
Yeah, it's so true. Now, if you're listening and you or someone you care about is dealing with this, you know, this problem, like stress, burnout, or emotional challenges, mental health issues, addiction, make sure you follow this podcast, because we focus on real conversations and real solutions that can help you take control before things spiral out. Now, at what point does something move from this is a personal struggle to this could, you know, have serious consequences?
Yeah, man, I think, Stacey, when it affects your ability to function, you know, every day. I mean, if you're not able to get up for work, if you're driving high, if you're not able, you know, maybe you can't hold down a job, or you're flunking out of school, when
yeah.
it starts to affect your everyday functionability, then I think there's a problem. You know, and I think there's a fine line between individual freedoms and you know, regulating some of these things. It was interesting. Some of the comments I get when I post videos about this are people complaining, well, I'm trying to take away their kratom, or I'm trying to away the marijuana, or I'm taking away their booze. I'm not. Listen, if you want to sit in your house all day long and get stoned, knock yourself out. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life.
Right.
But if what you're doing is affecting not just you, but your entire family, because there's a reason they call it a family disease, then there's a problem. Then there's a problem.
Yeah.
So that's where the line gets crossed, right? When it starts to affect the family. And if
exactly.
you have people that rely on you and you can't put food on the table because you're high all day, or you're drunk all day, or you're
right.
in psychosis and you're just, you know, your brain has been kidnapped.
Yeah.
Then yeah, there's a problem here. There's a problem here. So somebody needs to step in and help you.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, that's what we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to help people. That's
right.
how it works, right? That's part of the role of government, is to help and protect citizens.
Right. Percent. Now, what are the risks that people really don't think about?
I mean, obviously, I think back to my days when I was a prosecutor. You know, essentially, I think about the Tiger Woods case. The lawyers actually representing him was a former mentor of mine. But I've also read the probable cause affidavit. I've looked at the DUI video. The rest, I used to file these cases as a prosecutor. I wouldn't file this case. They're going to file it because it's Martin County and he's Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
But, you know, there allegedly a connection between the pain pills he had in his pocket and his accident. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that there is, right? I think that's the kind of thing that can happen if you have a substance use disorder, right? And Tiger may well have a substance use disorder, but him having a substance use disorder and being guilty of committing a crime are two very different things, right?
Right.
I don't think there's nearly enough evidence to convict him, but maybe there's six people out there sitting on a jury who would feel differently. But
right.
the point is that that's one of the consequences. You know, I mean, he's lucky he wasn't hurt, but he could have killed himself or killed somebody else, right? But you know, now he can't play golf. He can't, you know, he's in treatment. I mean, there's just such a myriad of things that happen because what happens is it starts to consume you.
Yes, it really
does.
And
not only does it consume you, but it consumes everybody in the family. It's like a metastasizing cancer. It's affecting everybody.
Yes.
Because the family is suffering while you are suffering, even if you don't know that you are, even if you don't believe that you are.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Now, what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when they're dealing with these situations? Like, do they wait too long?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, Stacey. I think we speak to the families. I think there's a couple of things, and I'm just sort of mulling this over. But I think sometimes the families say, oh, it'll be fine, right? Mm-hmm. He'll grow out of it. She'll grow out of it. Or if we just leave it alone, it'll disappear on its own.
Right.
Okay. Or, you know, treatment doesn't work. Or, you know, that legal thing that Asta talks about when he puts out his videos, that doesn't work either.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, it all circles around the idea that, you know, nothing can change. Well, nothing can change if nothing changes, right? It's the true definition of insanity. If you continue to do the same things and just watch, then yeah, it's going to continue like any disease. It will get worse and it will destroy the host eventually.
Right.
So I think that, you know, action beats reaction, right?
Yeah.
Better to try and do something now than somebody ends up as a, you know, in a state mental health facility, or they end up in jail, or they had an overdose. And now we're like in full on reaction mode, trying to unring the bell.
Right.
Which can be very difficult to do.
100%. Do you think that people maybe just don't know where to turn? I've come across so many people that come to me and they talk to me about addiction and they talk to me about lots of different topics and they just don't know where to go. There's, you know, even though there's so many options out there for especially for the topics that we have talking about mental health and talking about addiction, a lot of people, when you ask them, so what are you doing about it? You know, And they're like, I don't know. I don't know where to go. Or they go somewhere and the help they're getting is not going to give them the help they need.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons people call us is that they don't know what to turn to. And maybe they've tried something, maybe they haven't. And so I think people are like, wow, you're a lawyer. How can you help me?
Yeah.
Well, part of what we do is to give you control of what is typically an out of control situation.
Right.
I mean, there's two really good reasons to come to Florida. People say, well, I'm in New York. We've represented families from New York, you know, dozens of times. I've also, you know, we get calls from California and, you know, and Hawaii and Oregon. So people are calling us really there's two reasons why they're reaching out to us. There's two reasons to come to Florida. Number one, we have great treatment here in Florida and we've done a very good job, thanks to our former state attorney, Dave Ehrenberg, of cleaning up the industry. So we have great treatment here. But two, the other thing that we have is that we have laws on the books that allow you to put somebody into treatment, to make the decision for them that they can't make. So if they can't make the decision to save themselves, how do we save them? Well, if you're waiting for the state to step in through either the criminal justice system or the mental health system, good luck with that. If they do step in, you won't like what you see if you ever get them back.
Yeah.
So Florida's a great place to come because it's about empowering families. Now you can make the decision. You can make the commitment because your loved one simply can't do it because their brain's been hijacked.
Yes.
And so where we come in is empowering families. And a lot of families, when they reach out, they'll say, well, I didn't realize we could do this. Who would have thought? Come to Florida and get well, right?
Right.
That phrase isn't a new one. It's just that back 10 years ago, before we had a task force to clean up the industry, it had a very different connotation, which was, I'll send you a plane ticket. You come down here, I bang your insurance for as much as I can, and then I let you leave, right? You know, just the other day, I spoke to a family, and they were telling me how a treatment center down here sent their loved one a plane ticket to come down. Do you know how unbelievably illegal that is? You cannot do that.
Yeah.
You can't even so much as give them a toothbrush. So, you know, there are still some, for lack of a better word, shysters down here, and it really bugs the heck out of me that people have just no moral compass when it comes to these issues.
Right.
And I get it. We all have to put food on the table, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I have to answer the Florida bar if I do it wrong and they take my license away.
Right.
It seems the treatment centers don't get held to the same type of standards, but families don't realize there are options out here. Even when you've tried everything and nothing seems to work, coming to Florida is a really good decision. How do we get them here? Well, that's maybe a topic for a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
But we can get them here. And there's a number of ways to do that. And I work with some phenomenal clinicians that can help you with that. Or we could, you know, go the legal route in a different state, which is, again, something we can help with and we do it a lot. where we work with a lawyer from another state. But coming here is a good place to get treatment and a good place to get well if you do it right.
Exactly. You know, let's make this practical. If somebody is listening right now and they're concerned about themselves or a loved one, what's the first step that they should take?
Well, our clients, Stacey, are typically the parents. You know, I would tell them to go to our website, mentalhealthaddictionlawfirm.com, and start, you know, seeing the kinds of things that we can help with. I would also encourage them to go to our YouTube channel. So if you just Google my name, I'll probably come up on the very first page. You know, there's like about 1,000 videos where I talk about these kinds of issues. Yeah. There is literally 1,000 videos there. You can listen to them till your heart's content. I try to give away as much information as I can for free. You know, I think that's been an important part of what we do.
Now, when it comes to going to your website, where can they find your website?
So yeah, it's just mentalhealthaddictionlawfirm.com. That's mentalhealthaddictionlawfirm.com. That's our main website, and you'll find a lot of information on there. And I also just wrote a book that's coming out any day now about the Marchman Act. So the Marchman Act is a statute that's unique to Florida, and it allows us to put people with a primary substance use disorder into treatment for chunks of 90 days. It also allows us to get a court order to pick them up on an emergency basis without even a hearing, and basically have law enforcement come and get them and take them to a place of safety where they can be held for 72 hours. And I've got a downloadable book. We're just waiting to get it online. It'll not only have a bunch of information, but it's going to have, I recorded, I think, 3 videos for each of the 9 chapters. So you'll be able to listen to me until your heart's content.
Love that. I love that. So when is this supposed to be launched? You said next week?
I'm hoping in the next week or two, and it'll be on the main site. So stay tuned. I put a lot of time, energy, and money into that thing, hopefully.
Would this be also available on Amazon?
You know what? I think we're going to make a hard copy. I was just talking to my marketing guy yesterday. I believe we'll have a hard copy ready to go.
I love that.
So people can download it. There's a basic book on Amazon right now, but it's not nearly the quality that was written 8-9 years ago. This is a really, you know, there's a lot of content and a lot of meat on the bone for families wanting to learn about Florida's Marchman Act.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now, you know, one important question I want to ask you, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but this doesn't just affect one person. This affects the entire family. And a lot of times people don't realize that. But, you know, how does this actually impact the families?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a metastasizing cancer, Stacey. I mean, think about it. You know, the parents call us and they've got a child. You know, essentially, my mom is 83. I'm 59. And I'm telling you, to my mother, I'm still the same little boy I was, you know, 55 years ago when I was running around destroying the house. So I think for parents, when they see an adult child like this, this is still their little boy or their little girl. And that connection, and I watch it with my own wife. I'm a stepdad, but I watch my wife's connection with the children.
Yeah.
And there is just something very special, especially when it comes to the mums, the connection between mother and child. And the suffering that their loved one is experiencing is very internalized. And it really can wreck families. It's why the siblings move out. It's why the parents are fighting or even talking about getting divorced because they can't get on the same page about what to do with their adult child who says they're fine when we all know they're not.
Exactly. Now, what should families be doing differently?
I tell especially parents, be nosy.
Yeah.
Find out what's going on in your child's life. Sit and have conversations with them. Don't, you know, rely on ChatGPT to be the parent. And I say that tongue in cheek because we've seen a couple of instances where ChatGPT has been used as sort of a mental health counselor or a parent, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I tell families, be nosy. Find out who your loved ones spending time with. Get to know those people.
Yeah.
If they're working, where are they working? What are they doing? They're in school. What are they studying? Who are they spending time with, you know, either in class or out of class?
Right.
Be nosy. Sit and have a conversation with your loved ones, you know, about their life.
Yeah.
Are they happy? Are they unhappy? Who are they? Who is their significant other if they have one?
Right.
Just be nosy. Care enough to ask them the questions. And if they're aloof, okay, then maybe there's a red flag there. There's something's going on and you need to push a little harder.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, if there is one thing you want people to understand about mental health and addiction, what would it be?
Yeah, so I think the main thing is that this is not a conscious choice. This is a disease. And if you treat it as a disease, one, I think it'll help you to rationalize what's really going on here. Number two, I think that if you can say, and you can accept the fact that it's a disease, now you say, okay, if it's a disease, what's the cure? What's the treatment? Okay, that's where we come in. Well, the treatment is this. The treatment is that. Maybe it's a combination of things. But once you can accept the fact that it's a disease and that it can be treated and that the person can go into recovery, as opposed to, say, if it was cancer, going to remission,
right.
Now we can start to have a positive conversation about ending the chaos, ending the nightmare, ending the suffering.
Exactly.
But until that happens and you can accept it, and not every family's able to do that, say, well, it's a conscious decision. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I can't, with all the legal tools I have, I can't get them to change their mind.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not ready to accept the fact that this is a disease and it can be treated, then I don't know if I can help you.
Right.
I cannot sit down with your loved one and convince them that there's something wrong when they believe there's nothing wrong.
Right. I feel like a lot of times they have to hit rock bottom before they actually can get to that point of
healing.
Are we
talking about the parents or the patient?
Well, now I'm talking about the patient. Like, we were just talking about the parents right now. But, a lot of parents are in denial. So when you talk about parents being in denial, but what about, like, we think about, okay, the parents are in denial. They, now that we've gotten them out of denial, we've made them realize that there is a problem. It needs to be addressed. But the child in their eyes haven't hit that rock bottom yet. So is there a chance of saving that child, making that child wake up? Or do they really have to hit rock bottom before they actually stop the negative behavior and actually change their lifestyle for the better?
So it's not about the loved one hitting rock bottom. It's about the family hitting rock bottom. Because how many times have we heard stories about somebody had an overdose?
Mm-hmm.
They had an overdose. They don't know, right? They just repeatedly have. In Florida, we had a problem where people would overdose. They get taken to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be revived. They'd walk out of the emergency room and get high again in the parking lot and have an overdose, right? So an overdose, which is, the only other thing worse than that is death. And of course, there's no coming back from that. So the overdose, the idea of that being rock bottom doesn't necessarily change behavior as a general rule. So
yes.
It's about the family. Like, how much more suffering do you want?
Yeah.
An old mentor of mine used to say to me, when people have suffered enough, they'll make the decision. They'll make the commitment. And I hate
right.
to be blunt, but, one of the things I've refused to do for the last 10 years is sugarcoat this stuff and tell you we're going to sing Kumbaya and everything's going to be fine. No,
yeah.
Things are not going to be fine because the consequences of doing nothing can be severe.
Yes.
Very severe. And so because your loved one's brain has been hijacked, they're never going to hit rock bottom enough to come to the conclusion they need to change.
Right.
Are there people that get better without being mandated to treatment? Yeah, of course it happens. But the families we work with are dealing with somebody who cannot make the decision to save themselves.
Right.
So at what point is the family sick and tired of being sick and tired?
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they're willing to call us and say, hey, we understand there's a different pathway here and you can get us down it. So that we can end the chaos and the nightmare. And when the family, I mean the decision makers, the mother and the father, right? Irrespective of whether the parents are still married. When the parents are on the same page and ready to make the commitment, that's when change happens. But
mm-hmm.
until they've had enough of having enough, then nothing's going to change.
Right.
It's the true definition of insanity. And I hate to say it, Stacey, but some families call us, every 3 months, every year. And they, for whatever reason, and, I've got some good friends that are clinicians and they've been trying to teach me about the psychological component of this. They just cannot make the decision to save their loved ones.
Right.
I can't make the decision for you.
Yeah.
I'm the catalyst. Once you make that decision, now I can get you on that path to change. I can get
right.
your loved one on the path to recovery. But until you are willing to accept the fact that you can't change this on your own and you're going to have to make a different type of commitment, then it's going to continue.
Yeah.
And for some folks, they never come to that conclusion. One of the things we do, Stacey, is we try to stay in touch with people. I send out a weekly newsletter to about 14,000 people.
Yeah.
And my staff try to touch base with families. And I can't tell you how many families we've called 3 months, 6 months, a year after they first called us.
Yeah.
And what we find out? The person died. They just, for whatever reason, they couldn't make the decision,
yeah.
despite the history.
Right.
They just can't make the decision. And I'm not a clinician, so I'm not going to try and psychoanalyze anybody. And I'm
yeah.
certainly not here to play the blame game.
Right.
But maybe the family never hit rock bottom.
Right.
Can't help you.
Tell everybody about your services and the things that you provide to help families.
Yeah. So the mission of the firm is to save families whose loved ones are suffering from substance use, mental health disorders, and failed attempts at recovery. And there really are three components to what we do. Number one is obviously the legal. We're a law firm, so we're selling legal services. And there are three basic statutes that we operate under here in Florida, depending on the case, how much control you need. I mean, it's not unusual for us to be operating under all three of the statutes that we normally focus on at the same time.
Yeah.
And of course, people get arrested in the middle of these things. And so I don't take criminal cases anymore, but as a former prosecutor and defense lawyer, I understand how the criminal system and our system, you know, how it all interacts.
Yeah.
And so the legal component is obviously that's the catalyst. That's the engine. That's what gives you the ability to make the commitment and honor that commitment. So
Right. The
first component is legal. The second component is what I call clinical. No point in having this court order in your hand if you don't have a treatment provider lined up.
Right.
So sometimes families get referred to us by, you know, maybe they're working with a treatment provider or they're a clinician or interventionist and they've got the treatment component lined up. Great. If they don't, I have two clinicians that are part of our team. They are an a la carte option. They're not employees of mine, but they are our go-to. One's a licensed clinical social worker. The other's a forensic psychologist. And families, if they want, can consult with those folks. They can hire them to put together the clinical plan that's going to be necessary to get their loved one into recovery and keep them there. So number two is clinical. Number three is what I call law enforcement. So I have a private investigator on staff, and he has a team of investigators. Because in addition to the fact sometimes we have to serve people in different parts of the state, and we do operate statewide, sometimes people go missing. They walk out of treatment. They can't be found. Well, I'm a big fan of you know, the men and women in law enforcement, but sometimes they don't have the bandwidth to do what I need to do as quickly as I need it done. So I've got my whole sort of internal police force, and they do it for us. And that's important. And we found that those three things together, on most cases, really get the job done.
I love that. Now, one more time, tell everybody your website address to make sure they remember.
Thank you, Stacey. It's mentalhealthaddictionlawfirm.com. Mentalhealthaddictionlawfirm.com. Worst case, just Google me. I think I'm on page one or two of Google for most of the stuff that we do. So you should be able to find me. And if worst case scenario, Stacey, they can always bug you.
Yes, they could definitely bug me. Send me an email, go on my website.
Email Stacey.
Yeah, I'm everywhere.
It's not too early. She's not an early riser like her husband.
No, not at all. So the listeners out there, I just want you to know that mental health isn't something to ignore, and it's not something to wait on. The sooner you recognize what's happening, the more control you have over what comes next. And if this episode resonated with you, make sure you follow, share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And Mark, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I love when you come on. I love your dedication to helping others. And addiction is such a prevalent disease in the United States and all over the world. And it really affects everybody. And it has killed a lot of people. It has brought people to suicide. It has brought people to many different types of mental illnesses. And I'm so glad you're out there doing what you do and sharing all your wealth of knowledge and being able to have a facility and a law firm like yours who's able to help individuals and help families get the help they need so they can bring their child back to a level where they could have a healthy, happy, and productive life. So I thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Stacey.
And I see you soon.
See you soon.